This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
This is, there used to be an ongoing issue. Liam Dillon really wanted to get the word bugbear into a story. Bugbear.
Did he?
He never succeeded.
Oh, yeah.
Bugbear. An imaginary being invoked to frighten children, like a boogeyman.
Okay. I'm going to add it to the list of
Words that you just words. Strike if that you see. Yeah, like utilize.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 COGO. I'm Andrea Lopez Villafana, managing editor at Voice of San Diego, and I'm joined by fellow managing editor Andrew Keats. What's up, Andy?
Whoa, buddy. How are you?
Wow. So good. The Andes are back in the house.
And only the Andes. No Scott Lewis along for the ride today. But that's okay. We got this taken care of,
right? That's fine. Yeah. The show's going to rock.
Coming up on the show this week, Mira Mesa is one of the fastest growing suburban job centers in San Diego. But climate advocates say that the city's climate goals for the area are not up to snuff. We'll break down the city's climate action plan and the development of San Diego's suburbs and how the city is trying to balance that growth with its environmental goals. And in 2018, we reported the story of a Grossmont teacher who was fired for touching a student inappropriately. A state commission found he was likely to engage in similar behavior if he was allowed back in the classroom. That teacher is now back in the classroom. Why is it so difficult to revoke teacher credentials? We'll get into it. That's coming up. Stay with us. But first, a couple news bites for you. Janessa Goldbeck for supervisor. Janessa Goldbeck is a pretty well-known, I think, political activist here in town. She ran for Congress a few years ago. Mm-hmm. She has been often discussed for other open political seats in town in the time since that first run. And she's also just seen around on social media. She's written some op-eds for us.
Mm-hmm.
She has announced that she will be running for the County Board of Supervisors seat that is being vacated by Nathan Fletcher. That is mm-hmm. the District 4 seat. So we have been covering the fact that since Nathan Fletcher is running for state senate, mm-hmm. that he will be leaving that seat early in its term.
Right.
And if the County Board of Supervisors cannot come to an agreement on an appointment to fill the rest of his term, which is a fairly safe bet, I would say, because the board, except for Nathan Fletcher, is two Democrats and two Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
So there would have to be some sort of bipartisan agreement to appoint someone to that seat, assuming it's, I think, fair to say that there's going to be a vacancy at some point.
Right.
Now, this, of course, requires Nathan Fletcher to win
yes.
his state Senate election.
Everybody's getting ahead of themselves
yes,
here.
Right. If not, Janessa Goldbeck has announced that she will run.
Mm-hmm.
She is the first major candidate to announce that she is running for that seat.
Officially, yeah.
Officially. And so a couple weeks ago in the politics report, we mentioned the potential series of dominoes that could soon fall. So
mm-hmm.
State Senator Tony Adkins is termed out.
Yes.
So her seat will become vacant. Nathan Fletcher, who will be partially through his new term that he just won re-election for, will have an opportunity to run for that seat.
Mm-hmm.
If he wins, he will vacate that seat. And what's crucial about that District 4 seat is it covers most, not all, but most of the city of San Diego,
mm-hmm.
which means there's a lot of candidates who are already elected in the city of San Diego who would be potential options to run
right.
for Nathan Fletcher's seat. County supervisor represents more people than the city than a city a typical city council district, and so it's seen as a step up. Mm-hmm. And so there's multiple people in the city of San Diego on the San Diego City Council who could be viable candidates to run for that seat as well. Mm-hmm. And if they did successfully, that would open up their seat for somebody else to run, right? So that's this is the domino effect. But Janessa Goldbeck, she's not a currently elected right. official. Uh-huh. So if she were to win, none of that would matter.
So
none
you
of that
guys would apply. Are, anymore. It's all.
Then we all of what we had written would be null and void.
Someone can comment, say, you guys are wrong.
Or they could say, you wasted your time on this, which I would have to acknowledge was the case, which is often the case. You could comb back through my archives for a lot of hypothetical scenarios that didn't pan out that we wrote about anyway. But
it was smart. It was smart content.
That's the life of a journalist.
You know what I did see in Times of San Diego? They had a line that said that a woman has never been elected to represent the 4th district.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I mean, it's been a long time. I mean, before Nathan Fletcher, it was Ron Roberts' seat, and he uh-huh. held it. I think probably since you were born. What year were you born?
1995.
Yeah. So he was in that seat before you were born. So, yeah, it was pre-term limits. So that's like that, you know, we're talking about two people for a very long time.
Anyway, she said in the article
that she
wanted to break that barrier.
Yeah, Janessa Goldbeck's an interesting candidate. I expect she will do well, although, you know, name recognition and that sort of thing is always tricky.
Right, if someone from a city council, say in City of San Diego, were to...
I mean, then they would, it would say on the ballot, city council member, right. that sort of
As
thing.
As opposed to like what, nonprofit leader for her?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, and you think back on like... when Mara Elliott was elected to be the city attorney for the first time in 2016, mm-hmm. There was like a year of coverage leading up to that race. And Mara Elliott was certainly treated as a serious candidate, and she was a serious candidate. But she was not treated as a front-running candidate or mm-hmm. even the second candidate. There was two other people who had like longer, you know, deeper roots in local politics and mm-hmm. whose names had been bandied about as potential candidates. And so there was like a long period where they were jostling for endorsements from Democratic clubs to hopefully get the Democratic Party's endorsement. Mm-hmm. And then they like locked to a stalemate. No one was able to get the party endorsement, but they were still largely considered the front runners. And then we had a primary and Mara Elliott, who said on the ballot, deputy city attorney, she won.
Right.
Not either of those people that had been sucking up coverage and attention for months and months ahead of it. So, you know, in local elections with you know, people who don't have a lot of name recognition, mm-hmm. it's often very hard to handicap whether somebody's going to win or lose. But, you know, one thing Janessa does that I find is very interesting every year, she does a fundraiser for the LGBT center in Hillcrest, mm-hmm. Where she offers to come pick up your Christmas tree.
Oh yeah,
and chop it up and get it out of your house for you for a donation to the LGBT center.
I saw a headline from one of the TV stations that had she was calling herself the lesbian lumberjack.
Yeah, that's the whole shtick that she'll come dressed like a lesbian lumberjack and get rid of it for you.
Awesome. Well, she has you know, big endorsements at Mike Levin, Scott Peters, Juan Vargas, Catherine Blakespear, Chris Ward.
Yeah, and she's and you know,
goes on.
She but before she came back home from San Diego, where she's from, and mm-hmm. sort of started to establish herself here, when she launched her her congressional campaign, mm-hmm. she had a career ahead before that in D.C. So she has a lot of connections mm-hmm. with D.C. politics that nice. I imagine will serve her well.
Well, we'll see if you guys are wrong.
Hepatitis A in bathrooms. Boy, bad news. As if things weren't bad enough in our local homeless population and with the city's or region's approach, I should say, to homelessness. Mm-hmm. Hepatitis A is again lurking in the region. Lisa Halverstedt reported last week for us that there had been a small uptick in cases, including one death in the county. Now, the county's public health experts are recommending that the city of San Diego offer more bathrooms and hand washing stations to help combat the virus.
Yeah. So she had a little scoop yesterday that The city of San Diego, at the county's urging, is exploring potential sites for more public restrooms and hand washing stations, obviously, because hepatitis A spreads through
fecal matter.
But basically, the county's deputy public health officer sent a letter last week to the city's chief operating officer ordering the city to deploy more restrooms and washing stations. They were really urging the city to go beyond what they were doing before, which was making sure, you know, they were doing education outreach and also providing vaccinations. And the county said, more bathrooms, more washing stations.
I mean, this is one of those I'm old enough to remember when scenarios, when, mm-hmm. you know, there was a deadly hepatitis A outbreak in this city before the other more famous deadly pandemic that we experienced
COVID.
Prior to that, we had
this
thing that became like the symbol for the failure of our homelessness policy mm-hmm. in San Diego back in 2017.
Yeah.
And the main takeaway of that was that there needed to be more bathrooms. That mm-hmm. the state of affairs in homeless encampments was too unsafe for mm-hmm. people, and that it allowed the hepatitis A outbreak, which killed over 20 people, mm-hmm. to get as bad as it was. There was government reports that established this fact, and there was a lot of finger pointing back and forth between the city and county on about how that happened and why it happened mm-hmm. and what should be done to make sure it doesn't happen again. And it's just like one pandemic later, we're back here with the county telling the city that it needs to put out more bathrooms. Never mind that, like, we've continued reporting in the time since then that there still aren't plentiful, yeah. adequate bathrooms throughout the downtown area for homeless people or otherwise.
Yeah,
anyone, right. There's a lot of people who need to move about the city who, like, need to do what human bodies do, and, like, you know, the city, the mayor's office has had an approach. They've mm-hmm. explained that approach to us. In some ways, like, their goals seem sensible enough. I'm not mm-hmm. here to quibble with them, but, like, at the same time, how many hepatitis A outbreaks mm-hmm. is it going to require mm-hmm. before there simply are enough bathrooms in downtown San Diego? Would that be okay? Do we maybe not need to wait for the next virus that is most commonly associated mm-hmm. with, like, refugee situations to address this problem?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, so far there's only 4 cases and 1 death, and it's technically not enough to declare an outbreak, but we'll keep watching. The neighborhood of Mira Mesa is growing fast. As one of the city's northmost neighborhoods, Mira Mesa draws a huge amount of daily car commuters to its technology, job hubs, headquarters, and business parks. And some of the region's highest profile climate advocates are saying that if it's going to keep growing, the city needs to do more to combat the environmental consequences of that growth. What's up with that, Andy?
Wow. We have settled on one of my ongoing bugaboos, my fixations, because this all relates to the city's climate action plan,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, which the city first adopted in 2015 mm-hmm. and then adopted a newer and even more ambitious version of in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's how the climate action plan was explained to me ahead of that 2015 adoption.
Mm-hmm.
It was that every time the city goes out and tries to approve a new development that's going to provide more housing in mm-hmm. the city, it runs up against local opposition
mm-hmm.
who doesn't want that housing to be built in its one in that location.
Right. It's too big. No parking.
It's going to make traffic bad. It's mm-hmm. going to make parking bad. And that the city is always left trying to fend off those concerns in that one specific instance.
Mm-hmm.
And then it either wins or loses. And then it goes out and it has to do it again mm-hmm. in the next neighborhood, in the next neighborhood, in the next neighborhood. And it was also presumed that at the time,
mm-hmm.
based on the way the city of San Diego was voting in national elections especially, that the people who opposed those projects often considered themselves environmentalists.
Mm-hmm.
They acknowledged the scientific reality of climate change. They wanted the city and state and federal government to do more to combat those things. And so that there was a contradiction here, because one of the fundamental ways that we could make a big difference in our GHG footprint as a city is by making it easier for people to live in the types of areas that require them to, or that would allow them to commute to work by transit or walk or bike, or if they are going to drive, at least be short drives.
Right.
And so these greenhouse gas emissions, or GHG, are exacerbated by the type of development that otherwise occurs if you don't allow housing to be built in already established neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. The sort of sprawl development out in the backcountry that allows, that forces people to drive very long distance, and that makes transit impossible.
They're far from their job. They're going to have to.
Right. And so the city was thinking that what it would be doing by adopting this climate action plan and a series of steps within it was strengthening its hand, giving it leverage in each of those individual standoffs to say, well, you might not like this housing project in your backyard specifically. However, we have a citywide commitment to lower our greenhouse gas emissions by 50%. At that time, in 2015, they were going to cut the city's greenhouse gas emissions in half.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the major ways we're going to do that is by making it easier to build housing in the types of urban environments that allow people to live a low GHG lifestyle, either by driving not very far, making their trips to the grocery store very short, or allowing them to walk to the grocery store, allowing them to commute to work by bus or trolley, right? And that this was going to be like a game-changing piece of leverage in those ongoing negotiations. Well, the city adopted that climate action plan, and in that climate action plan, it said that new development, this was 2015, new development in the areas within a half mile of transit stations would, over time, progress to be 50% of people would commute by some means other than a car, predominantly transit, but also biking or walking, right? And then the city started passing community plans, the smaller pieces of development regulations in specific communities that say how much housing could be built there. And one of those was in 2016. The city proposed new community plans in Golden Hill, Hillcrest, Uptown, and North Park. And at the urging of climate activists, they ran the numbers on those new community plans to see, would the development contemplated in those community plans achieve the greenhouse gas emissions reduction, or excuse me, not the greenhouse gas emissions reductions, the changes in transit, walking, and biking that were prescribed by the climate action plan? And the answer was no. Like they definitely would not. By the city's own analysis, it would not happen.
Right.
And then the city adopted that community plan anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, and that was like kind of a big deal at the time, the environmental group that is suing the city now on this issue threatened to sue them then on that issue. And then over a series of years, the city brought forward another community plan. And again, they either didn't study, or if they did study, found out it absolutely would not achieve the changes in commuting behavior that the climate action plan said that they were going to do. And they just would do it anyway. And this became a sort of farce in the city's sort of promises versus reality that I became fixated with. Because,
as you do with things.
Well, right. Because, like, if you're not going to do it, then, like, something's got to give here, right? Like, the city staff would just, in their presentations to the city council, would just talk past the issue. Like, I have this one slide I used to, like, I really love that they would, they put up that just showed that in all of the new community plans, the, like, the amount of transit usage was going up and the amount of car usage was going down. And that was, like, just the case that they made to the city council. Like, hey, see, look, it's going in the right direction. Never mind the fact that, like, they just ignored the fact that it still wouldn't meet the standard that they set.
Right.
All they said was, like, but it's better.
Right. It's better than it was before.
It's better than it was before, which, like, by all means, that's better than it being worse than before. But it's also not what you said
what
you were going
to
do.
What you said you need to do.
And then the city staff would put this up and they'd show it to the city council. And the city council, who I believe is composed of smart people who know about these policies and have read about them, listened to the briefings on them and are aware about it, would just not like acknowledge the fundamental like farce that was being displayed. They wouldn't say, hey, we have a planning document that says we're going to reach X, and you didn't even tell us whether we would or wouldn't reach X. You just told us something different entirely. Would you mind giving me some clarity on whether we're going to reach X? They would just ignore it. Yeah. Like, everyone was just talking past the issue.
And this would drive you crazy.
Just drove me insane. It was just like, I was here a few years ago when you said that this would be the thing. And so finally, and when I say finally, I don't mean that I'm like happy the city's getting sued. Mm-hmm. I'm just happy that somebody else has acknowledged the insanity that's been happening in plain sight that I sometimes felt like I was the only person seeing. Finally, the Coastal Environmental Rights Foundation, SERF, is suing the city over the city's Mira Mesa plan. Mm-hmm. This is another one of these community plans that allows for lots more development and which the city's own planning documents demonstrate like will not reach the changes in commuting or in traveling behavior that it says it needs to make. Now, I had to change to traveling behavior there because through all this, when they adopted the new community climate action plan in 2022, the requirements only got more strict. After years of every single community plan not meeting the old standard, they just made the standard harder.
Nice.
So now instead of all commuting trips, it's all trips, period.
Okay.
So like not just going to work, but going to the store, going to the park, taking your kid to school, taking your kid to soccer practice, whatever, everything. Going to the doctor. And it doesn't just apply to people who live within a half mile of transit. It applies to everyone. So it's like a significant expansion in the requirement here. And now they have a new community plan that they're bringing forward for approval. And again, it just like walks, like ignores that standard. Now, somebody somewhere is saying like, yeah, they've decided to ignore that standard. Why are you being so why are you getting so histrionic about this? And they might be right about that. Perhaps that's something, this is something that I should just let go. But what drives me crazy about this is the selling point on the climate action plan was that it was a legal mandate. It was going to be something that if the city ignored, if the city didn't reach these standards, that unlike other plans that the city might pass that, you know, set some goal or make some sort of promise, that this one you'd be able to sue over. And so I was going, well, maybe you don't care. Maybe the city doesn't care. Maybe the city thinks it's impossible to reach the standard. Maybe when they like they set this target and when they actually put pen to paper for these community plans, it was actually not possible to build at a density with enough bike lanes and transit frequency improvements to actually meet the standard. And they have responded to that by just saying, well, we're going to ignore it then. Maybe a million things. But if nothing else, the environmental groups that otherwise exist to sue governments because of their lack of compliance on environmental goals, it was their silence on this that drove me the most crazy because that's what you're for,
right?
That's what you're like, you know. And so,
well, they're like mocking you, like, yeah, you can sue us if we don't do this,
and then they just don't sue. So the city now has a lawsuit against it over the climate action plan in general, that it adopts these lofty plans but it didn't lay out how it was going to get there. That's one lawsuit that the city's facing. And now there's this other one against the Mira Mesa plan for not adequately meeting the transit standards. And I, you know, I guess the long and the short of it for me is I feel a little bit less crazy than I did 6 months ago. I was looking for some sort of explanation about how I could be so misguided. And I actually used to call people and just say like, what am I missing? Can you help me understand what's going on here? What did I not understand about the climate plan? What did I not understand about these community plans? What do I not understand about the world as city government works? Like, I'm open to all of the explanations for why I'm stupid. Just please tell me. And I could never get a good explanation. I mean, people tell me that I'm stupid all the time, but I just wanted, for this time, somebody to walk me through how, and I couldn't get that answer. So I'm just glad to see, however this lawsuit turns out, I'm just glad to see that it turns out I wasn't crazy.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
In 2017, a Grossmont teacher named Joshua Allen Barney was fired for making inappropriate comments and contact with a student. Even though he was fired from that job, and school administrators and a court determined he did not understand how it was wrong and that he would likely do it again, he kept his teaching credentials, and now he is back in the classroom. So this follows up on years of coverage the Voice of San Diego has been doing across multiple different reporters. Jacob McWinney is the most recent one to dive into the story. What did Jacob find specifically occurred between when we last had done this, had checked in on the situation with Joshua Allen Barney, and now?
Yeah. So let me walk a little bit through Barney's history. So Barney had worked for various schools at Grossmont Union High School District for around 25 years.
Okay, long time.
In 2017, though, he was placed on leave from his job as a PE teacher and tutor. This was following a complaint that a student brought forward who was in his weightlifting class. And some of the accusations that she made was that Barney grabbed her butt and told her it was time to work out her booty. And then
that's not subtle.
No.
That's not an edge case.
No.
That's, you can't do that.
No. And he one time he told her that the bar she was using to lift should touch her titty or nipple. These are obviously not terms that you would hear from
a high school teacher, PE teacher.
Yes. She also alleged that he touched her collarbone a few inches from her breast, and that one time she was wearing ripped jeans and he rubbed them and got really close to her vagina. She also said that one time he lifted her shirt and punched her and told her that she had a very nice core. These allegations from the student were made to a school nurse, and according to the documents that Jacob reviewed, she was, you know, very distraught by this experience, and she said that some of the comments that he made her feel gross. Yeah. Because of what was done.
I mean, so those are all like egregious, mm-hmm. right? But they're egregious in a special way, which is that they're so clearly built into some sort of plausible deniability that mm-hmm. connects them to his job as PE teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, he's not just reaching up her shirt and touching her stomach. Mm-hmm. He's doing it under the guise mm-hmm. of complimenting her core, mm-hmm. which seems like a carefully chosen word to connect it to weightlifting. And like each of them being weightlifting related seems like somebody who is consciously thinking
mm-hmm.
about connecting this obvious harassment
to something else.
What his official job is mm-hmm. and making it okay.
So in this process where he was placed on leave, he was later fired. And from that firing, he was able to appeal that firing. And that appeal went to the Commission on Professional Competence, which is the state authority that oversees termination appeals. And his case was, according to documents, was that he admitted to not using anatomical terms when he was speaking to the student, and he also said he touched students to make sure that they weren't injured. So again, those situations where physical, you know, interaction did come about, he said that he was just making sure they were not injured or sore from the exercises they were doing in the classroom. But the commission determined that his firing was the correct thing to do for the school district. And that's while he was appealing this firing, that's when we wrote about it the first time.
Okay. So after that, the appeal came in and said, correct decision, shouldn't be in the classroom. Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't be in the classroom. They specifically said in that report, too, it found that he had been disciplined in 2013 for making inappropriate comments to a colleague in front of a couple students, and as well for showing students images of female celebrities and NFL cheerleaders, comparing their, quote, physical attributes, end quote. That's what the commission found. And here's what Jacob wrote about their actual decision. In denying Barney's appeal, the commission wrote that Barney was, quote, fully to blame for his conduct, end quote, and that he, quote, he cannot be relied upon to act morally and uphold the responsibilities of a public educator. Respondent has no appreciation for the wrongfulness of his acts and misconduct. As such, if allowed to retain his position, it is likely that he will engage in the same or similar misconduct again, the commission wrote.
This is not subtle, right? The findings here go beyond the even, you know, like what we reported. This isn't some some witch hunting expedition by reporters that are you know, playing up their findings.
Right.
The proper appeal court here rules that he doesn't get it.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand why what he did was bad. And if you put him in a classroom, he's going to do it again.
And they were right to fire him is what they decided.
Which, again, it's like, it's hard to fire teachers in this state.
Mm-hmm.
To be fired and then to appeal and to have them say, whew, right decision is a high bar. That is a high bar in this state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then what happened?
So, so he was fired and that firing was upheld. And as Jacob reported, the Sweetwater Union High School District hired Barney late last year to teach at Otay Ranch High School. An official told Jacob that he was, quote, properly background, and he was checked before he was hired, and then the district did its due diligence. They declined to tell us if they had called his previous employer.
Yeah.
They declined to tell us if they had Googled his name, right, which our article would have popped up. But an official at Grossmont did say that they were not contacted and that they would have disclosed the reason behind why he was fired if they had asked.
So teachers have to have a credential, a teaching credential.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's provided by a separate body, a state body.
Mm-hmm.
To be hired at Sweetwater, he had to have had a credential.
Mm-hmm.
So after he was fired in Grossmont and after he appealed that firing and the firing was upheld, why was his credential not taken?
Yeah.
Which would have prevented even a shoddy backgrounding process from happening because you need to have a credential.
A credential. Uh-huh. So the governing body over teacher credential recommendations actually did recommend that his credential be revoked. Again, in this process, Barney or any teacher has the right to appeal those recommendations, which he did. After that process, the state office of the attorney general declined to prosecute his case, and therefore his credential remained valid.
I mean, how many things need to fall through to get a guy who was reported twice, fired for that, no easy task, appeals the firing, is upheld, has a credentialing office say, let's yank this guy's credential.
Mm-hmm.
You appeal that credential, and then yet another state body comes in and doesn't necessarily say, no, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Just says, we're not going to continue on this process.
Right.
We're not interested in this fight. And so the credential remains, and he's able to go get a new job in another district who, you know, I don't exactly know what to say about the district's handling of the situation, but I mean, boy, do you need to like have a lot of people do the right thing just to prevent this one thing from happening, which again, like unequivocal, the statements from the, you know, from the commission that heard his appeal. Unequivocal.
Yeah. And it's not clear why the state office of the attorney general declined to prosecute the case, but their decision in not prosecuting the case meant that it left him free to teach again and end up in a classroom.
So how does it stand now? Is he still in the classroom? Is he still teaching weightlifting classes?
Yeah, so when Sweetwater learned of Voice of San Diego's previous coverage and also saw a recent anonymous comment on the story, the district placed him on leave and have said that they've initiated an investigation. They would not share any other further details about the investigation other than to say that it's ongoing. So Jacob will continue to follow the story and any other similar kind of accounts.
System doesn't seem great. The system doesn't seem great to me. That's all I'm going to say on that one.
You can submit tips to us at vosd.org/contact.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast in San Diego. You can get Voice of San Diego every morning with The Morning Report, our most popular newsletter. You can find it at vosd.org/morning. Andrew Keats is managing editor at Voice of San Diego. Andrea Lopez Villafana is also managing editor. I'm Nate John, producer for the show. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.